Thank you, Marshall. Please call the next case.
Now calling A24-1728, State of Minnesota Respondent versus Cameron Durrell Banks, Appellant.
Okay, good morning. This is our third case on the calendar for today and our last case scheduled for oral argument. We are here on a Zoom calendar, so just a reminder to make sure that you mute yourself when it's not your turn to speak. You can leave your camera on, and to make sure you announce in a loud, clear voice at the beginning, identify yourself as well as your client. We are recording these arguments, and the audio recording will be available on the court's website within 24 hours. In addition, we would ask that you not take any recordings without having the permission of the court ahead of time. With that, I believe both counsel likely already know that you will each have 15 minutes for your principal argument. We will turn back to counsel for appellant for a 5-minute rebuttal. And there should be a clock in one of the screens, or one of the screens you can see. Can you both see that screen with the timer on it?
Yes.
I can, Your Honor. And would the court allow me to step away for 1 minute to check my Ethernet cable? The audio is a little glitchy.
Yeah, certainly. Please, take a moment to do that.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Certainly. So I think that's a good point at which just to remind everybody that if you're having any issues with the technology today, you can stop and let us know, and we'll pause and try to resolve that issue so we can ensure that we can hear from everybody here today. The technology sometimes provides more challenges than at other times. So with that, counsel for appellant, there are 15 minutes on the clock. You can begin when you are ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel, and by all means, if at any point my audio isn't clear, please interrupt me. I represent the appellant in this case, Mr. Cameron Banks. He is challenging his conviction for first-degree burglary based on the argument that the state was able to rely heavily on improperly admitted hearsay evidence in order to obtain that conviction, which had the underlying offense of assault fear. The key piece of evidence relating to this issue and argument is the actual videotape of the complaining witness in this case, AM, that was taken at the scene by one of the responding officers. The video is not terribly long, about 13 minutes, but it begins by showing the officer approaching the apartment building. Outside of the front door, you can see my client standing and speaking. I mean, you can't hear what they're saying, but he's speaking with another officer. He is unhandcuffed, not clearly under arrest, and appearing to be very calm along with the officer. As the recording officer moves into the building, AM is seen a little far down the hall in front of her door. She greets the officer calmly, invites him in, and in response to his questions within a few seconds is laughing or giggling. And this goes on for about another minute and a half until about a minute and 20 into the tape, she makes mention of a DANCO, a no contact order related to domestic abuse or assault. She neglected to mention, however, that this DANCO had been applied to her. But at that point, she started sobbing.
So, Mr. Maravilli, I've watched the body cam video, and I'm wondering about the way that you have described it. In some respects, I understand there are some points at which she appears to laugh. Why is it that is not attributable to a nervous laughter that is based on being upset, being discomfited because of the situation that had just occurred?
I would say multiple reasons explain that. First, the district court did not make any finding on that at all. District court didn't address the laughter at all. Nor, I might point out, did the prosecutor. The prosecutor did not address that argument in the respondent brief. The issue of AM laughing was studiously ignored below. Finally, no authority has been presented in which nervous laughter can be described as somehow causing such an aura of excitement that the witness would not fabricate or have the opportunity to do so. And I suppose there's a fourth point here, because we know as a result of the trial that in fact AM was fabricating. She lied to the police about where she went that night, what she was doing, and about the nature of the Danko. She admitted at trial that she lied, pages 80 and 81, I believe, because she was afraid of getting in trouble for violating her own Danko. So what I intended to get to in my argument was to say that while this may be a garden variety hearsay issue, the facts present in this case are truly unusual. Certainly, I've never seen where the witness who claimed she was assaulted and burglary committed against actually had the Danko on her. You see, I think that fact informs the entire videotape taken by the officer. The only points at which the witness sobs are at 1.5 minutes in after she mentions the Danko. And then again at 11 minutes, where again she's talking about the Danko. I think this court's assessment of the video has to be informed by the admission that AM made at trial that she lied to the police because she was afraid of getting in trouble. That fear is evident. I mean, if anything, if this court were to want to attribute her laughter, which happens multiple times through the video, to nervous giggling, it was because she was afraid of getting arrested. So I've relied on, I think, several significant cases. I suppose Tapper is the primary one where, in that case, I realize the Supreme Court merely affirmed the district court's finding that, in fact, the statements were not made under the aura of excitement. But I think it is significant that in its analysis, the Tapper Court declared that its precedent supports that physical manifestation of stress is a key indicator of aura of excitement, but it did not cite nervous laughter. It cited a victim appearing scared, shaky, agitated, very upset. The Bauer case that I cited said the same thing. That is absent here, and I must stress as much as I can again that the moments in which the witness here, AM, sobbed during that statement was when she referred to the Danko. She was very afraid of getting arrested. That much was established. Another key factor in Tapper was whether the suspect was still a threat. Here we have patent evidence that he was not. It looked like they didn't even take him into custody. He was just calmly talking to the officer outside the apartment building, away from AM. Now, I've gone over, I think, enough detail about excited utterance analysis. I should briefly address the fact that the district court also found this was somehow a present sense impression, which, I've addressed in my brief, pointing out that this is just relying on the same thing, that it's either as the witness is perceiving the event or so soon after that there's no possible time for fabrication. Well, AM was fabricating. She was lying about her activities earlier in the night. And the neighbor's statements as well.
Mr. Maravigli,
Yes.
I appreciate that, but I mean, the focus of this interview with the law enforcement officer did not address the earlier incidents. I mean, the fact that she had gone to Mr.
Banks's apartment or whatever. So to say she was lying, I understand that becomes, perhaps evident later, but that I don't think it's fair to say she was lying in this, because it wasn't the subject of the interview.
I'm saying, I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm saying she was lying about her own activities earlier. I mean, I'm not at trial. I can't advocate. Well, I mean, I don't think her claims were truthful at all. And, on that point, the physical evidence presented at trial were that she claimed that his hands were bloody, but that he was choking her. But the photos showed zero blood on her neck. So there is reason to doubt her claims that she made in that videotape as well. But I'm wanting to frame the analysis here is that the Tapper court said, was there an opportunity to fabricate? That test doesn't even have to establish that fabrication occurred. The question is, did enough time pass? Did the witness's thoughts turn from her fear to perhaps embellishing or falsifying her account of the event? And the evidence that we have here is that she was falsifying things about her own activities. That means this satisfies that criterion. This witness had time to reflect, and her thoughts turned to protecting herself and making my client the bad guy. So if I've framed it more clearly that way, that's what I'm relying on here. Not this court finding that she lied about everything, but that this was a hearsay statement. It was not an excited utterance, and it was not present sense impression because it doesn't meet those evidentiary standards as they've been analyzed in the case law I presented.
I understand that. I just, having looked at the interview myself as well, it seemed like the officer was dealing very specifically with what occurred, with how Mr. Banks entered her apartment and all of the
Yes.
details that pertain to the immediate, not what happened earlier, the Danko status. I mean, he was really focused on what did he do, how did he get in, what did he then do. I mean, that was the nature of it.
Yes, he was,
I'm
but
trying to evaluate the hearsay, statement in that context.
well, again, this is not about, the quality of the statements or evidence introduced in this hearsay statement as they pertain to the elements of the offense, so much as whether it satisfies the test for being a non-hears or a hearsay exception.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to focus on here. Of course, the officer was focused on what happened. I mean, that didn't stop AM from veering off and discussing the relationship in general and mentioning the Danko. The issue is whether this witness had the opportunity to fabricate. It doesn't, I mean, the case law doesn't say that, there has to be a specific type of fabrication. It just says fabrication. And in
And
this,
so, pardon me for interrupting you, but just because of the interest of time, what was she fabricating in this taped recording?
she mentioned the Danko,
Okay,
and I
is that the
believe,
only thing? Anything other than that?
well, Your Honor, I believe she was fabricating her account of the incident. My client testified at the trial and said he never put his hands on her except her arms to hold her off of him. And given the fact that she had the Danko, went to his apartment earlier and started a fight, I think that there is a serious element of credibility to that version versus the one she gave in the statement. So, since you're asking me directly, I believe her entire account of the incident, but for him coming through the window, was a fabrication. She attacked him in the apartment, but the jury made their decision, and that's not what we're dealing with here on appeal. The issue is whether this was an excited utterance or present sense impression. It does not meet that test under the case law that I provided.
Mr. Marvili, doesn't some of your argument actually cut against your position? We're, when looking at whether this is an excited utterance, the startling event or condition was him bursting through the window. And then the question is, and I think the hearsay statement that you're alleging was improperly allowed to come in relates to that. So I think we're really focused on that third piece, which is whether the declarant was under that sufficient aura of excitement. Now, if she was worried because he showed up at her house and she didn't know whether she'd get in trouble for violating the Danko when he showed up. Why is, I mean, what you're saying, she was in fact worried. She was in fact scared, based on the fact that she knew that the Danko named her as the person who wasn't allowed to have contact and could potentially be in violation. So doesn't that actually add to the fact that there was an aura of excitement here that was caused by the entire unfolding of events?
Well, first, I'm not just saying that she lied about the Danko. She admitted it in her trial testimony under oath at page 80 and 81. And the issue is not whether she's talking about herself, the defendant, it's about whether she has the opportunity to reflect and lie. I don't need to make out a case here that she lied to the police because she admitted that during trial. That has to inform, because the judge made the decision to admit the videotape after she testified. So, this is why the district court's order, it seems to me, is patently flawed for not considering all of the facts and certainly not following the framework established in Tapper and Daniels, which is supposed to have a victim of a crime appearing shaky and unsettled and talking about the offense itself. The whole first minute and a half here, she talked about the offense. She giggled. She answered calmly. Every time she described Mr. Banks' actions, her demeanor was calm and flat and to the point. She only got upset when she talked about the Danko. So that's the threshold test here. If she was upset, what was it about? She wasn't under the aura of the excitement from the incident because she described it calmly throughout, especially in the period between the minute and a half reference to the Danko and then the reference to it again at 11. She was uniformly calm. I honestly do not see how the court could have found that she was so under the aura of stress and excitement that she didn't have time to reflect on anything else. She was reflecting on something else, all right, keeping herself out of trouble and getting my client into it. Now, I address the significance of the harm in my brief. I just want to touch briefly on the fact that I see the state's case as centering primarily on this video rather than AM's testimony, because during the prosecutor's closing arguments, there were multiple references to the claims in the videotape about threats to kill, pages 184 and 185 of the transcript, because that went to the element of the underlying offense here. AM herself only testified to a little bit of fear during her actual testimony. That wasn't quite enough.
So the 15, your 15 minutes has expired. We will come back to you for an additional 5 minutes on rebuttal. At this time, let's turn to counsel for respondent, and the 15 minutes are back on the clock. Counsel, you may begin when you are ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, opposing counsel, my name is Megan Kelly and I represent the respondent in this case, the state of Minnesota. This is a case that the court should summarily deny because appellant is essentially asking the court to overrule the sound reasoning of the trial judge in this case, who had the opportunity to view the evidence, view the testimony while it was happening, while it was coming in, and made a sufficient record to justify the decisions she made regarding the admissibility of these hearsay statements. The court properly admitted these statements as exceptions to the general prohibition against hearsay, and the court properly rejected the motion in this case for a downward depart or a dispositional departure. And given those things, I'd ask the court to deny the appeal, and I would open the floor to any questions from the court.
Counsel, do you agree that it's not clear how much time passed between when the incident occurred, the breaking into the window and coming into the room, and when the interview with the officer occurred?
It is somewhat unclear from the record, but based on the testimony of the officers and when they received that call for service, the time they arrived, okay, it's approximately 10 to 15 minutes before the officers arrived and made contact with the appellant and the victim in this case outside of the apartment. So it was a very short amount of time that passed. The appellant was still actively bleeding when law enforcement arrived, the victim. as noted by the testifying officer, was still shaken up, and that's apparent from the body camera footage of their interaction as well.
So, if and that's in the record, right? If we go in to look at it, there will be some testimony that it was about 15 minutes.
Can't direct Your Honor to a specific page, but I believe that was referenced in Deputy Collins' testimony.
Okay, and if that's the case, then how could this be a present sense impression when that requires that it has the statements have to be made while perceiving an event or immediately thereafter? I think that my concern is with the word immediately and whether that was actually what occurred here.
Well, Your Honor, the parties were still together when law enforcement arrived. I think it would be a different case if the parties had separated, they'd gone their separate ways. There was time for them to calm down and remove themselves from the situation. But from the body camera, the two of them were still directly next to each other when law enforcement arrived. So while the assault might have happened minutes before, the situation was still ongoing between the two. They were still directly together. And so her statements to law enforcement were immediately following the assault that occurred within the apartment.
Would you respond to Mr. Maravigli's concern about the opportunity to fabricate and the motivation that the victim had for fabrication in this matter in terms of the interview with the officer?
Yes, and I believe the questions the court asked of opposing counsel really point to the issue in this case. She acknowledged that there was a danko. She acknowledged they weren't supposed to be together. And obviously, that's information that is available to law enforcement. And looking at the case law, that is just one factor to consider. I believe it was the Tapper case that was cited by opposing counsel. It does not say that the ability or the opportunity to fabricate is the leading determination in whether the excited utterance exception should apply. It's one of many things that the court can consider in the totality of the circumstances when admitting this statement.
But given that it's one of the factors to consider, can you respond more directly to it?
And I guess I don't quite understand your question, Your Honor,
Well,
if
I
you could
think,
rephrase.
sure. It just seems like there is validity to the point that she had something to hide here. The fact that she'd been at his apartment earlier. I mean, none of this, of course, gets talked about with the officer. But the Danko, which comes up a couple times first, just in passing, and then clarification that she was the person that was barred from having contact. And so, given the repetition of her statements throughout this interview, her explanation of things, I mean, does that possibility of fabrication take on a greater role in the evaluation?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. When you look at the totality of her testimony and the fact that much of it was immediately corroborated by law enforcement, they could see this window that was broken. They could see the blood going into the apartment through the window. They could see the blood on the appellant. So, all of those things, one, point to the immediacy that she wouldn't have had significant amount of time to think and fabricate a story, but also goes to her credibility, which obviously any allegation that she fabricated information is really just an attack on her credibility. And there was other information that law enforcement had and that the court was aware of when making this ruling to show that she didn't necessarily have the opportunity to fabricate. This had happened very recently, and the information she was providing was largely corroborated at the scene.
Thank you.
If we conclude that the district court abuses discretion by admitting the hearsay from the camera, what's your position, and how do you convince us that the error was harmless?
And is Your Honor speaking about the statements from the victim in this case, or the
Yes.
statements that came in from the neighbor?
Yes, victim.
Well, I would again point to the fact that much of the information was corroborated by other evidence at the scene. In fact, the defendant admitted to every element of the offense, that he, after a fight with her, followed her to her apartment, pounded on the window. Obviously, the window was broken, whether leave his testimony or her testimony about the intentionality of that, but he entered her apartment through a window that he broke. And by his own admission, he then grabbed her. That is a fear-based assault, given the totality of the circumstances. And so when you're evaluating the case and the strength of the evidence, every element of the crime was independently corroborated by physical evidence at the scene or by the defendant's own statements to law enforcement and on the stand. So there was significant other evidence separate from the statements made by the victim in that body camera footage.
Your brief focuses on defending the evidentiary decision based upon excited utterance, but not based upon present sense impression.
Yes, and I respondent's position that excited utterance, this evidence falls more cleanly within that exception to the hearsay rule.
When you say it falls more clearly within that exception, you acknowledge, I gather, that it is not a present sense impression under the rules of evidence.
Your Honor, I think it could be disagreements about whether or not it falls within that exception. There is an immediacy requirement.
No,
And
I'm it, yes, there can be disagreement. That's what I'm trying to focus on. You concede that while there may be disagreement, it's not a present sense impression under the rules.
think the evidence as it came in could fall within a present sense impression. It did happen very shortly after the assault took place.
You didn't
And
defend that in your brief. I was understanding that your choice not to defend that was a concession that it's not a present sense impression.
not a concession, Your Honor, just that our position that it falls more squarely within the excited utterance exception.
Well, we don't need to spend a lot of time on it. My own view is that if this were presented as a law school exam, I don't think you get much credit by saying it was a present sense impression. I'm not speaking for the court, just my observation of the plain language of the rule and the circumstances here. And the fact that you didn't argue it might suggest that you agree.
Understood, Your Honor.
Seeing no other questions, did you have any other words you wanted to share in the last 5 minutes and 20 seconds?
No, Your Honor, I would just reiterate that the district court in this case had the opportunity to listen to the testimony, review it, and that this information should come in as an excited utterance was supported by the testimony of the responding officer, as well as the video in this case that showed the victim appearing upset, crying at times. Her facial expressions and body language all indicated that she was upset. She was still shaken up by the incident, and the district court made that finding after reviewing the video. I think the focus on the victim laughing in this case and how that somehow negates any stress or aura of excitement that she was under is just contrary to common sense about how people behave to stressful situations. It is not uncommon for individuals to laugh when they are under extreme amounts of stress. It's a common trauma response. And so I think the fact that she was laughing actually goes to an excited utterance that she was still experiencing that trauma and stress. So I'd ask the court to affirm the decisions of the district court and deny this appeal. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. So we will reset the clock for 5 minutes and we will turn back to counsel for appellant for the final word here today. Mr. Maravilli, please introduce yourself at the beginning of the presentation and your client, and you may begin when you are ready.
Yes, my name is Paul Maravilli, and again, I represent the appellant Camarion Banks. And if I may, I would just straight away like to address respondent's characterization of the video that it shows that Mr. Banks and AM were still side by side. That is not true. I've watched that video multiple times. Mr. Banks is outside the building on the step with one of the officers. They're talking calmly. I mean, AM is well inside the building, another 20 feet by her apartment door. The situation was totally de-escalated. There was no sense of urgency or danger, as Tapper mentioned, could be a factor.
Assume we agree with you on the evidentiary question. Why isn't this error, if it's error, harmless?
Yes, thank you. I attempted to illustrate in my brief the fact that, I mean, certainly for a very concentrated portion of the prosecutor's closing argument, page 184 and 185, the video was almost exclusively emphasized. Because in the video, there are AM's claims that Mr. Banks repeatedly threatened to kill her, that she was scared, all the things that the prosecutor need to satisfy the element of assault fear. The problem the prosecutor had was that during AM's own very limited testimony, the only thing that she described on page 76 was that she felt a little bit of fear. That doesn't on its face go towards a showing of fear of immediate bodily harm or death. So the extent to which the prosecutor needed to emphasize this out-of-court video that really couldn't be cross-examined because it was admitted after her testimony shows the extent of the harm here. You know, again, the test being not whether the rest of the evidence can uphold the conviction, but whether there's a likelihood that it significantly affected the verdict. And I think, given the emphasis placed by the state on these hearsay statements, the harm is not only clear, but significant. And when you factor in that the deputy was asked to comment, offer his opinion on what her state of mind was, you know, clearly the state didn't get the evidence they needed from AM. I would just also like to point out again here, a respondent has tried to offer that it's not uncommon for people who are still terrified or afraid to laugh. No evidence was solicited or elicited on that point at all during trial. No authority has ever been offered for that premise. So there is nothing for the respondent to base that claim on other than her own opinion. I'm sorry, I'm just looking at my notes here. I just wanted to make sure, because I wasn't sure about Judge Halbrook's question about, I thought I heard the judge say that AM admitted during the video that she had a Danko against her. If I misheard that, I'm sorry, but I need to stress that she very much did not admit that, which again was why she testified that she lied to the police about the Danko. She was afraid of getting in trouble.
Perhaps I misspoke.
Okay.
What I thought occurred in the second reference to it at about the 11th minute was the reference, and then somehow the officer clarified that, that if she was the source of it, that it didn't matter for purposes of that
No.
particular incident.
That
Because,
did not happen. At
okay.
no point was the officer ever given the impression that she had violated her Danko in the evening or earlier in the evening.
No, but wasn't he trying to reassure her that this was not a violation? And I can look at it again, but and it may not have much significance ultimately.
Oh, I mean, if you're referring to how he was saying him coming through her window into the apartment wouldn't be a violation, I don't recall hearing that, but I mean, I would agree with that.
Right.
But that's not what AM was afraid of. She was afraid of what she had done earlier in the evening, which again, it reflects, it shows that she had the opportunity to reflect within this 15 minutes that I think Judge Wheelock is establishing was at least the amount of time, again, before they showed up and the situation was completely de-escalated.
And of course, we have a circumstance here where the jury asked to review the video again during deliberation, correct?
I understand that, yes. But that to me shows that the jury wanted to rely on this video more than AM's own testimony, which goes to Judge Ross's point about, you know, how significant was the harm here?
Right.
That point there alone shows how significant this evidence was. Just shouldn't have come in. I
Counsel,
didn't.
your time is up, but I do have one question for you if Judge
Yes.
Halbrechts is done.
No, go ahead. Thank you.
So given that this is you would agree this is an abuse of discretion standard of review that we're applying to this question.
Yes, Your Honor.
So given that this is a more deferential standard of review, and it let's say we agree with you, it's a close call because I think my understanding is that she was dishonest about whether she had been to his house. I don't think she said whether who the Danko was against, but the point of allowing this type of hearsay in is because there's some belief that there's an assurance that there's trustworthiness in the statement. The district court had in front of it the information, had the video, it had the or yeah, had her testimony on whether or not she was untruthful, based on your pointing to that in the transcript. Is there enough here for us to agree with you that the district court, in fact, abuses discretion here?
Well, first, I would respectfully submit that I don't agree. It's not my position that this ruling was a close call. I have watched a lot of video, but when I've watched listened to audio, this was not an upset witness. To me, the district court's abuse of discretion not only it lies in that error, but in the really remarkable lack of findings. The district court basically said that she just saw enough that the witness was still under the aura of excitement. Based on what? I just don't think the district court showed the level of discretion it was supposed to exercise in admitting this remark. I mean, this clicked all of the checklists from the Tapper case. Situation de-escalated, suspect not a threat, witness is not scared, shaky, agitated. She's calm, she laughs. She is calm through almost this entire interview. So I respectfully have to say this was not a close call. It is an abuse of discretion where the evidence so patently contradicts the ruling and the district court's own findings are so insubstantial we can't mine what the actual basis for admitting these hearsay statements truly was to say it was an exception.
Okay, thank you. All right, I see no other questions from the panel, so I just want to take a moment to thank both counsel for your appearance here today, for your argument, for the briefs that were submitted as well. They are all very helpful, and the case is submitted, and a decision will be issued within the statutory timeframe. And with that, that ends oral argument on our calendar here today, and the court is in recess. Thank you.